Well, good morning. So great to see you. Welcome to a beautiful Michigan winter weekend. Wow. How lucky are we, right? Seriously, some of you people watching from a tropical environment, we here in Michigan feel so sorry for you. Next week's on lying. But anyway, it's so great to have you here. If you're a guest, welcome to Northridge Church. And I'm telling you, if you are a guest, you chose the perfect weekend to be a guest at Northridge because we're talking about everyone's favorite subject, money. It's funny, every service I say that, about 200 people walk out. It's just crazy, but we really are glad that you're here. I have a good friend who's a part of Northridge, been here for a lot of years, and he never fails to remind me the first time he came, I was speaking about money, and I don't speak about it that much, but the first time he came, he was speaking about money, he says, and I came back anyway. And so we're hoping that what you experience this weekend can mark your moment. In fact, our series is called Money Talks. There was a family coming down the stairs after the early morning service today, and two girls and a dad. And the two girls stopped at the stairs and said, money talks, 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 talks. Turned to their dad and said, Dad, that doesn't make sense. But it really does in our world, because by that we mean money has power, unbelievable power. It has a ripple effect of influence that affects our choices in our personal lives, our professional lives, our relational lives. Money talks. It changes our culture. It changes our world. It has unbelievable potential to change our lives. And certainly for the good, but also for the destructive things it can do in our lives. Money talks, 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 but, and the reason this really makes sense, is that though it has so much power, most of us don't talk about it. I mean, in most of our families, we didn't learn about it, our parents didn't learn about it. In most of our contexts, this is a very hard subject. It's very personal. It's very much woven into our lives, and we don't like people to talk about it. It gets really, really personal. And so though money talks and has so much power, we don't talk about it. And so it gives it even more power to destroy because we don't understand it. But you know why Jesus is the greatest teacher to ever walk on the face of the earth? It's because Jesus didn't ignore the tough subjects. In fact, you might not know this, but Jesus talked more about money than any other issue he spoke to. And there are a lot of important issues he spoke to. Faith and trust and prayer and God and love. He talked more about money than anything else because, and this is important to get, money is the number one destructive force in the lives of people today. It's the number one replacement God. People look to money for what only God can give. And so Jesus addressed it so we could understand it. Money talks, 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 talks. And this weekend, we're moving on from our first talk last weekend on the dark side of money, how it can have such a powerful impact in a negative way in our lives. We're moving on, and I've called this talk the hardest part. You know, it's fun how much easier it gets, right? The hardest part. See, the hardest part is not talking about it, not coming to grips with its power and its destructive force. The hard part is doing something about it. It's acting on it. It's executing a different plan with money than what we naturally are geared towards. That's the hardest part. And so that's where we turn this weekend to. And I want you to be aware of this truth. This is what we'll build the whole conversation this weekend on. The truth is that we must either master our money or it will master us. Money has power. It really does. And it has power for good, but it has power to destroy. And the difference is found in whether money is controlling us or we're controlling our money. I mean, money's just a tool. There's nothing right or wrong with money. It's certainly not a God. It's not going to give us what only God can give us. It's not going to bring us fulfillment or satisfaction. It's a tool. But too many people are owned by the tool instead of owning it. Being controlled by its power instead of controlling it, and that is destructive. And I really formulated this truth with some care. I use the word either here because it can't be both. You are either in control of your money or it's in control of you. There's no middle ground there. You're mastering it or it's mastering you. And this idea of master, anytime you have something with power, it has the ability to dominate. And so we either have to dominate this tool or it will dominate us. It kind of takes me way, way back. I don't know why I thought of it right now. I haven't shared this in any service. It takes me way back to the very first time I washed a car in one of those self-washing kind of car washes. And I've only washed a car, I don't know, 1.5 times my entire life. So this is big memory, but you know those powerful things you put the quarters in or whatever and it like that? Well, I didn't have any clue that it was that powerful. And so I just left it in the thing and put the money in and pulled the switch. That thing went and was flying around the car and flying around the thing and it hit me in the face. I have a scar right here from that. I finally grabbed the thing, tore it out of the wall, kicked my car. No, I didn't do any of that. But it was this powerful, powerful thing that I wasn't in control of. And then I got control of it and did something. Money's like that. Man, it can accomplish great good, but it can be destructive if you're not in control of it. And you need to know, whether you're a guest or a regular tender, we don't just give, you know, talks that are relevant, talks that are appropriate. We just don't share popular opinion about these things. Everything we teach, we try and draw from what Jesus taught us. And so when I say you have to either master your money or your money will master you, I'm not making that up. I'm simply telling you what Jesus told us. In fact, look at 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 9 through 10. Jesus said it through one of his many messengers, through Paul. He says, people who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge men into ruin and destruction. And just know when he says people who want to get rich, he's not talking about, oh, you want to become a mega billionaire. Most of us aren't there. He's talking about people who pursue money as if it's the answer for their life. People who pursue money as if that's what will change their life and change their fulfillment and change their contentment and change their world. Man, they fall into temptations and traps and foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin. Money talks. And then he said this in verse 10, for the love of money, when we lift up money and we think that's what we need, that's the solution, that's what will bring us happiness and fullness, if we could just have a little bit more of that, when you love money, that becomes the root of all kinds of evil. And here's what happens when we fall for it. When we think that money can give us what only God can truly give us and we make that exchange, it says some people eager for money have wandered from the faith and as a result, pierce themselves through with many griefs. I mean, money has power. And it's about time we talk about the reality of that power and we talk about how to use that power for good instead of evil and how to control it instead of be controlled by it. Don't you agree with that? It's really important. But I tell you, the words, as important as they are often hard to understand. You know, I mean, it's just a calculus. It's just a formula. And so God doesn't just give us the words of truth. He also then gives us examples of them in real life. And a great example that Jesus gave us was the prodigal son. The prodigal son is the son that rebelled against the father. And the father in the story is an illustration, a metaphor of God. And the son actually thought it was the father that was standing between him and happiness. It was the father that was blocking him from the life that he thought he could have. The father wasn't good for him. The father was bad for him. The father was holding him back and father wasn't giving him what he needed. And so he said, I want my estate now. He wanted his inheritance now. Give me all I want now, then I'll be happy. And so the father gave it to him in this story. But he blew it. In fact, just look at that. There's so many truths to this, but look at the financial component in Luke 15. Not long after that, the younger son, he got everything he thought would make him happy. He got the more money. He won the lottery, you know. He hit the mother lode. He got the job with the bonus. He got, man, I've got what I need. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off to a distant country, and there, look what he did. He squandered his wealth in wild living. He used money for that which he thought would bring him pleasure. And after he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in the whole country. And when you live on the edge, know this, the economy's gonna take a negative turn and you'll be left with nothing. He began to be in need and he longed to fill his stomach with the pots that the pigs were eating. I mean, he really inverted his life and messed up. This is a failure financially. I mean, talk about not mastering his money, but being mastered by it, right? I'm telling you, this is our culture. This is most of our lives. And I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just trying to be honest and truthful. I have to wrestle with this issue. I fail in this. But you know the good news of the prodigal son is that even in the area of finances, and these four words really describe my primary view of what ministry is about, what this church should be about, what Jesus makes true for us. Even in the area of finances here, failure is not final. I don't know where you're at in life today. I don't know whether you cheer the idea of a truthful talk on money or you really don't want to hear it. But here's the reality. Failure's not final. All of us mess up, but because of Jesus, failure's not final when we make different choices. The prodigal son failed miserably in the area of finances, and as it always does, it ultimately knocked him out. But when he returned to his senses and he turned back to the father and he realized that the father and his ways weren't the problem, his view of money was the problem, he turned back to the father and he was able to overcome the devastating failure. And here's the good news today. The same is true for us. Many of us are held in the grips of bad choices in this financial thing of not doing what the Father tells us to do with the area of money, trying to replace him, find security and peace and contentment in money. And we get exactly where the prodigal was at varying degrees on that spectrum. And the good news is our failure is not final either. I don't know where you are today, but your failure doesn't have to be final. Isn't that the most awesome news in the world? It is. We can get free from the bondage that we've allowed ourselves to be in, from the bad thinking. We, like the prodigal, all we have to do is go back to the Father and realize he's what we need, not just his gifts. And when we start following his ways, he frees us. And that's really why we give this talk. Money talks, and so I'm giving talks on money. And let's turn to the application, because we actually believe just knowing the truth isn't enough. It's living the truth. And so the application is, if we're going to master our money instead of being mastered by it, then this reality has to become a part of our lives. We must, and must, it's not an option, because it's an either or. You're either going to be mastered by it or master it. We must have a plan, a wise plan, and then the wisdom to work the plan. I've had a lot of plans in the world, but I didn't have the wisdom to work them, you know? We have the best intentions when it comes to finances, but we don't live them out. It's a mess. So you need wisdom in creating the plan and then wisdom in working the plan. And just so you know, again, look what God says, Proverbs 21:20, in the house of the wise are stores of choice food and oil. Not in the house of the rich. In the house of the wise, wisdom leads to having our needs met, that which we need in the area of finance. But foolish man, a foolish person, devours all he has. So what's it look like to have a wise plan and to have the wisdom to work the plan? Well, let me describe it. And I need to tell you, speaking of having a plan and then working the plan, I can't tell you everything I'd like to tell you about these things. I tried last night, and 3 hours later when I was ending that talk, you know, people weren't listening anymore. I can't tell you everything I'd like to tell you. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to hit the high point principles and practices, and then I'm going to ask you to do the work of working this through your life, evaluating yourself, looking at it, examining if whether or not anything I'm saying is true, and then making application. So what's it look like to have a wise plan? What's required if I'm going to have the wisdom to work the plan? Well, let's dive in. The first thing that has to happen is we have to develop wisdom in regards to money itself. Because here's the reality. Most of us don't understand money. Doesn't matter if you're rich or poor. Most of us have no clue, no wisdom as it relates to money itself. And it's because many of us have never had anyone talk to us about it. Don't learn at home. Don't learn in a school. Don't learn in business. It's an expectation that we know and we don't know. And we're lost, many of us. And so we have to develop wisdom in regards to money itself. And so I'm just going to lay out what God says is wisdom towards money. And then you're going to have to run yourself through the grid. The first thing, if we're going to have wisdom regards to money, then we have to have the right view. And most of us don't. I don't by nature. In fact, I don't, even after 40 years of being a Jesus follower, naturally have the right view of money. I have to fight for it. I have to discipline myself. I have to remind myself. And the right view of money is that God owns it all. God owns it all, every part of it. And I know a lot of people have arguments about this whole thing. God owns it all. I worked for it. He didn't show up at the factory at 6 in the morning for 40 years. I don't know why I talked like that. I don't even know why I said it like that. I did have a couple of shots of espresso today, but I did the work. It's mine. What do you mean God owns it? Here's the thing. Who gave you life? Who keeps you breathing? Who keeps your heart beating? Who gave you talents? Who gave you opportunities? Who gave you experiences? Who opens the door? And who can close the door? God. He owns it all. He owns it all. When I talk about this with family, I love to use health food like McDonald's French fries to explain this to my family. And it's like, there are times when you drive through the window of McDonald's and, you know, because I'm such a healthy person, I'd never order fries. But I order the kids fries, my grandkids now, fries, you know, little bags of fries. I don't get them. You oversized people, I'm not talking about inside. I'm talking about you people who eat like 2 tons of French fries at a time are crazy. So we get them those little bags of French fries, you know, and then the back. And though I'm healthy and don't buy them for myself, I still want French fries. And so what I do is I start reaching back in the car, you know, trying to take theirs. And you know what their reaction is, right? No! My French fries! My French fries! So I turn around, stop the car, look them in the eye, and I says, I bought those fries. And what you don't know is that I can buy more fries than you can eat in a lifetime, but if you won't share one of your little fries, I'll never buy you fries again. You know, it's like, by the way, I'm a real positive grandparent. But the fact is, they think they're my fries. The truth is, they're my fries, and I'm giving them to them. And that's how our life is. God owns it all. That's the right view, but most of us don't see it that way. When was the last time you said, God, what would you like me to do with your money? Most of us basically say, God, why haven't you given me more money for me? We have a whole wrong view. God owns it all. And just so you know, I'm not making this up either. Look at James 1:17. Every good and perfect gift is from above. It comes down from the Father of the heavenly lights who does not change like shifting shadows. God owns it all. And I'm going to tell you right now, I know we don't like to share our fries, but you need to know God has no problem buying more fries. But why would I buy more fries for kids that are so greedy and selfish they can't even share one healthy, unhealthy fry with their grandpa to put him in the grave earlier? I mean, why should I buy them more fries? Why should God provide for us out of his abundance when we are so selfish we don't even acknowledge that he owns it all? Why would he? So you see, we don't even have an understanding of money. But if we're gonna have the right understanding, and by some of you are looking at that outline, and not all of you do. Some of you don't even ever open the program and find that there's an outline in there. But some of you, if I don't put an outline in that program, you really think I've lost my salvation and I'm probably not going to heaven anymore. Most of you who think that way are engineers, just a thought. But here's the thing. If you have pulled out that outline, have you noticed that it's like the Encyclopedia Britannica this week? It's like, wow. How many pages is this thing? And you're noticing that we're, you know, pretty far into this talk, and I haven't even really started the outline, and you're starting to get nervous, aren't you? Yeah. Me too, and the team too right now. So, this is why I have to hit the high points, but the right view's big. If you turn that around, you turn everything around. But if we're really going to have wisdom about money, then it's not just the right view. We need to have the right values. And it's the eternal versus the temporary. If I'm going to have the right values about money, then I need to see the value of eternity versus the value of now. The same is true with all of our values, by the way. Why wouldn't I lie to get ahead? Well, if I live for the value of now, I would, but if I live for the value of eternity, I wouldn't. Why would I use my money for positive purposes instead of just for me? Well, you wouldn't unless you see how you use money as being an eternal issue instead of just a temporary issue. I'm telling you, if you can change your mindsets on the wisdom you have of understanding money, it changes everything about how you see this thing that resides in your wallet. The right values. And just so you know, Jesus said this. Look at Matthew 6, 19 through 21. Don't store up for yourselves treasures on earth. Come on, that's temporary. Moth can destroy it. Rust can destroy it. Thieves can break in and steal it. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Have an eternal view in value where moth and rust don't destroy and thieves don't break in and steal. And then he really says this powerful phrase. For where your treasure is, that's where your heart will be also. And if you treasure money as this temporary treasure, your heart's buried in the temporary. But if you make it eternal, your heart's buried in the eternal, and it changes everything. I'm telling you, I've been very influenced by our culture, and you have as well. And money talks, and its power often leads to destructive things because we've let our culture be our teacher instead of God. We need to change it. Well, if we're going to really have a wise view of money, then yes, we need to have the right values and the right view, but we also have to have the right character, the character of humility and compassion. Humility because we have to acknowledge it's not all about me, and compassion because when we should be compassionate towards others. And the truth is very often we're not humble because we do make money all about us. And the only compassion we have is for ourselves. We want more and more for me. And that's not compassion, that's selfishness, that's greed. It's the wrong view. We need the right character. Paul said it. Look at Philippians 2, 3 through 5. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Come on, stop living just for yourself. How small and empty is that? But in humility, consider others better than yourselves. Each of you should look not just to your own interests. Yes, you have interests and needs, but you should also look to the interests of others. And why should you do this? Because your attitude should be the same as that of Christ Jesus. So if we're going to handle money properly, if we're going to master it instead of being mastered by it, we've got to, get a view of money that's wise. But it doesn't just stop there. Then we have to go to the next step, which is we have to develop a wise plan for our money. A wise plan for our money. Now, can I just be honest with you? The average American, and we're pretty average here, right? I mean, well, I actually, I think you're above average, but the truth is we're probably average. I'm average. And if we're average, then most of us don't have a plan. Now, if I asked you, you'd say you have a plan. Your plan is to win the lottery and spend more. But that's not what we're really talking about. I mean, a real plan. And those of us who do have a plan, often it's not a wise plan. And so we've got to put this together. We have to develop a wise plan for our money. And just so you know, this is what God's told us. God's told us everything we need to know about this powerful force called money so that it can be a tool, an instrument for good. But we don't listen to him. Look what he says in Proverbs 21:5, the plans of the diligent lead to profit. When you're disciplined, when you're wise. But as you need to know, that's just as true as the opposite. Haste leads to poverty. The plans of the diligent, of the wise, versus the haste, the lack of plans. One leads to security, the other leads to poverty. Which is you? In every talk I write, I feel like there's a sentence or two that's like tweetable, Social media, it's like, this is what you should take your phone out and write. But I know I'm doing a talk on money, so there's no way you're going to tweet anything about it. But that's a whole different issue. This to me is one of those powerful thoughts, and let me state it in a sentence. You will never become financially free by accident. Oh, well, what if I win the lottery? You won't be financially free. You'll even be in greater bondage. You won't know what to do with it, and the pressures and all the people seeking after you, which is why so many people explode their lives apart when they have money. You'll never be financially free by accident. You really do need a wise plan. And here's the good news I have for you, even though so few people are willing to talk about it. Jesus told us everything we needed to know to develop a wise plan, right? And so let's look at the elements of it. If we're going to have a wise plan according to God, then we need the right priorities. I mean, this is big. We need the right priorities. And I'm going to tell you right now, we have the wrong priorities. And we have the wrong priorities because we're not seeing God as the first priority. Eternity is the issue. Character's not driving. I mean, we're seeing our needs, our comfort, our desires, our dreams. Those things are kind of clogging up our sense. We need the right priorities. And so what are the right priorities according to God? Well, the first right priority, and man, we've really inverted this one. It's God. He owns it all. He's the right priority. And just so you know, I'm not making this up. Jesus said it in the context of talking about money. He says, you know, those people who don't know God, they're blowing up their lives, they're destroying their lives, they're experiencing such brokenness because they're living for money thinking that will produce in them what they're missing, but it's not true. And then he says, but you who know God, you shouldn't be doing that. In fact, look at what he says in Matthew 6:33. But seek first God's kingdom, not money. God's righteousness and ways, not the world's ways, you know, trying to fill your life with money and all these things that you think money will buy, God will provide for you. Make God your first priority. I can't evaluate your life, but you can. When it comes to money, is God your first priority? If we're going to have a wise plan, then God tells us that we have to have a priority for savings. Well, this isn't happening in our world. Told you last week, 157 million Americans in debt to credit cards, to non-mortgage debt. Are you kidding me? Our politicians don't even have savings as a priority. It's nuts. They have their next election as a priority. That's why they're destroying things. It's about power, you know, money talks. Saving. God said it. I mean, we really do need to save. Look at what he said. He said in Proverbs 6, it's almost really indicting. It's almost insulting. He's talking to human beings created in God's reflection, created with the capacity to think in complex levels. And when it comes to the issue of saving, which should be so obvious, right? Look what he says in Proverbs 6. Go to the ant. Then he goes into this, consider its ways and be wise. An ant's wiser than we are. It says, the ant has no commander, no overseer, no ruler. And by the way, I would have added something if I was God, and you should be thankful that I'm not, but if I would have added some of this. If it has no commander, no overseer, no ruler, and no brain. And yet it stores its provisions in summer and gathers its food at harvest. Even an ant knows that saving's important. Isn't it sad that we don't? And it's all an issue of believing that money provides for us in the now what only God can provide. We have to save. Most people have the wrong view of saving, by the way. They think saving is robbing them from the happiness they want. But the truth, saving is the only way you can pay yourself a wage. When you don't save, you're robbing yourself. Not anybody else. Saving's important. And if we're going to have a wise plan, then we need one other right priority at least. We need integrity. You know, an ethical heart, an ethical life. And Romans 13, verses 7 through 8 is just one place he talks about it. Give everyone what you owe him. I mean, give him what you owe. Have integrity. If you owe taxes, pay taxes. If revenue, then revenue. Let no debt remain outstanding. If we're going to have a wise plan, we have to have these issues involved in our life. But it goes further than that, not just the right priorities. But if we're going to have a wise plan, it has to be practical. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm pretty good at creating unbelievably profound and complex plans. You know, lines to here and here and all those plans. It's just that they don't work. What good's a plan that doesn't work? When Roxanne and I were young, I tried to create these financial plans, and it's like, you know, here's our financial plan, baby. You know, we didn't have much money, and, you know, here's our financial plan. She goes, I don't think we can survive on $2 of groceries this month. You know, it's like, it's not practical. And many of us are very impractical, either to the extreme and extravagant or to the miserly. And what we have to do is we have to have it practical, and it has to work. Now, I have to tell you right up front, what I'm about to share with you is not rocket science. It's not complicated. It's pretty simple. It's just that we don't like to hear it. And I also want you to know that what I'm about to share with you, this practical idea of a basic plan that can work, is not going to give you the adrenaline fix that you were hoping for when you came out in the snow to actually come hear this talk. If you want an adrenaline fix today, you're going to have to trust the lions, which, well, good luck with that one. That's the only place you're going to get it. But what's the practical plan? Well, I'm going to do it element by element in your life, and it involves three blanks and then what they can invest in. Financial plan. The first one is the number 80. And what that stands for is 80% for living expenses. We're talking about a financial plan here, right? In case some of you just woke up. We're talking about a financial plan. 80% for living expenses. Of everything God provides for you, 80% for living expenses. Obviously, not everyone has to do that. But this is a basic plan that can work. God says you have needs. God says you have to take care of your needs. God says he's going to provide for your needs, and he wants you to enjoy this life he's given you. So 80% for living expenses. Man, that's the vast majority. Then you go to the next one. And the second part of the plan is 10. That's 10% of every paycheck to yourself in savings. Now you're investing in yourself. You're paying yourself a wage. You're giving yourself hope for a future. And over time, it compounds. It's an amazing thing that happens. In fact, there are books that have been written called The Millionaire Next Door. There's an older one and a newer one just being released. And it highlights the fact that the average millionaire in America had an average job with an average salary, but they were not average people because they invested in savings in the way the average person doesn't, and it compounds it over time, and mailmen and factory workers and teachers are millionaires because they simply saved. Crazy. And so 80%, 10%, and then the last part of the plan, and this tells us that we have God as a priority and we know God owns it all and it's not ours, is 10. And it's 10% of every paycheck to the work of God, to God, giving back from the gift he gave us to the giver of the gift. Because God said, look it, I never want you to forget who owns it all. And so when I buy you a bag of French fries, every once in a while, I'm going to lean back and I'm going to expect to get a French fry. Because I want you to remember that I can buy more French fries. That I'm the source. 10%. And he says, I don't say it, he says, give to my work through the local church because that's where I'm working, that's where I'm doing my work. He says it. Just so you can see it, and then I'll expand a little bit on this. Look at Proverbs chapter 3, verse 9. And I'm not going to prove you can spend 80% on living expenses. I'm not saying you have to spend that much. I'm saying that's a good plan. It's a wise plan. I'm not going to have to prove to you you should save. I've already shown you. God said, the ant does it. Why wouldn't you? But a lot of people have a problem with giving. So look at what Proverbs 3:9 says. Honor the Lord with your wealth, with the first fruits. Make it your first priority to honor the Lord with what he's provided for you. Look at Malachi 3:10. Bring the whole tithe. Tithe means tenth, 10%. He's the one that said it, not me. Bring the whole tithe into the storehouse. The storehouse is the place where God's working. It's called the house of God. It's called the place where he's called his people to come, the place where he's doing his work, what he's involved in. Bring the whole tithe into the storehouse that there may be food in my house. Test me in this. He says, in fact, I'm promising you something and you can test me on this. Because if you do what I'm asking you to do, if you put me first, if you let me reach back and grab the French fry, see if I will not open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing that you'll not have room for it. He's not promising to make you rich. He's promising to fill your life to the full, whatever you are on the economic spectrum. And he says, you test me on this, and you test me if your joy factor isn't bigger, your contentment factor isn't bigger, your peace factor isn't bigger, your life isn't better, not because you have more or less money, but because you have all of me. You just test me on that. And that's what he's talking about here. Bring the 10. Now, let's be really, really honest. Most people don't have a problem with me saying live on 80. Most people don't have a problem with me saying, you know, save 10. Most people have a real challenge with me saying you should give 10% to God through the church. Most of you think, wow, I should get 20% saving, and then I can just do little kind acts to every homeless person in my neighborhood. By the way, how many are there in your neighborhood, right? Most of us think we're more generous than we really are, and then our generosity doesn't equal lives changed from God because we're not investing where God's doing his work. And so I thought I would just share with you two reasons I found in my own life and two reasons I've seen in most people's lives that we tend to have a problem with this idea of giving to God through his church, okay? You can do with it what you want. The first one is this. We just don't understand why we should give to God. Well, I mean, why? I mean, in fact, they usually use counter arguments. If he owns it all, then he doesn't need mine. That's true, but he's not doing it so he can get from you. He's not doing it for himself at all. He's doing it because he knows what you lose if you forget who he is, like me as the grandpa in the car with the fries. He knows the minute you're looking to money instead of him, you've just lost everything you're looking for. He knows that the minute you love the gift more than the giver, you've lost connection to the only one who can give you life in fullness. He knows, and giving is a way that we can consistently contemplate that reality. And it makes sense that he would ask us to give to his church because you know what Jesus said? Most people don't know this. Jesus says, you want to know what I'm going to be doing in the world? I'm going to be building my church. You know what the work of Jesus is? He's building his church. He's building into his people, into his family. He's building life and fullness into it. He's changing lives. He's saving marriages. He's healing brokenness. He's doing all this. I mean, he's showing compassion around the world for his church. And this is why he wants us to give to him through there, because that's where he's working. Why wouldn't he want us to give there? Of course he would. And I believe this. If we're not self-absorbed and selfish, if we're not embracing the wrong values where we put ourselves first instead of God first, if we don't think we're smarter and better than God like the prodigal, then we'll have no problem with what God's asked us to do. But can I just lay down the truth? The vast majority of us here have a big problem with what God's asked us to do, and we're proving it by not doing it. And I just think, like Jesus, every once in a while we have to like declare the truth that makes us self-reflect on the reality that we don't live like God owns it all and we haven't made God a first priority. Oh, we sing like it and we raise our hands at church and we make ourselves look like it, but we don't live like it, which is why we're not experiencing the fullness of his promises, which was why we're looking for the cheap replacement of money instead of the full satisfaction of Jesus in our life. And it's just about time we fix this problem in our lives. And this is where I want, if I could be really encouraging just for a moment, to mention all of you who have been giving to God here at Northridge. I just want to encourage you and thank you. You've impacted thousands of people's lives. All around the world, we make a difference spiritually, eternally, and in the economic realities of people all around the world. And it's only possible because you've decided to take God seriously with your finances and give. There's no way to calculate the impact that you're having around the world, but you need to know it's profound. And I just want to commend you for listening to God. And I know that I don't have to commend you because I know that you're already experiencing the fullness of God in your life that you didn't experience before you gave. It's an amazing thing. The second reason people have a problem with this whole idea of giving, you know, is that they don't feel like they have enough to give. And I would bet a vast majority of us who don't give think, I just don't have enough to give. There are people with a lot who can give. I don't have that. But can I just tell you this isn't true for most of us? And I hope you'll get this sentence. The truth for most of us is that we don't have enough to have all that we want and to still give. That's the truth for most of us. Because just a little bit more will make us happy. Just a little bit more will bring us satisfaction. Just a little bit more. But that's just not true. I mean, we really do have to learn to manage our money. And I have to tell you, I wrestle with this. I wrestle through this in many seasons of my life because Roxanne and I have gotten to the place where we don't want to just be basic givers. We want to be sacrificial givers. And I have to rethink that all the time because I too have the future to think about. I too have these things to think about, but I've decided that I believe God can provide for me no matter what happens in my future, as long as I'm faithful to Him in my present. And I have to wrestle with this too. The reality is a lot more of us could be experiencing the fullness of God if we would manage our money with God's wisdom and we would follow His prescriptions for a plan. And I want to encourage you, here at Northridge, we want for you to experience that. And so we have this thing called Financial Peace University, and it lays out all God's principles that you can apply to your real world. It's transformed thousands of people's lives here, and we're going to re-up in a big way in the winter and spring of 2019. And I just can't encourage you enough to get involved in that. And we're not telling you what to do. We're not telling you how to do it. We're not trying to dip into your wallet. We're trying to help you figure out finances and make good choices. And so at all of our campuses in the lobby this weekend are some Financial Peace University people. You can check into that, or you can go to online. The link was already on there. I really encourage you to check that thing out. All right, so let me just give you now a couple of other things, and then we're going to actually worship. I want to end the talk this way. I thought this was important, because if we're not going to be mastered by our money, we have to master it. If we're going to master our money, we have to be living according to the way God wants us to. We have to ultimately be, in a minimum, being, you know, generous to God's work in His church, 10%. That's what He says. But what's got to be the foundation of our life if that's going to happen? And I'm giving you this so that you'll know, but more than that, so that you'll evaluate yourself and say, are these things true of me? If we're going to really build the foundation for the life that can then live for God, then we need to start with devotion to the right God. He owns it all. He's the first priority. We should have devotion to the right God. And Jesus said it in Matthew 6:24, money or me, you can't have both as your God. He said, I'll provide your needs, but if you look to money to be your provider, then boy, your God's going to be very bankrupt. Devotion to the right God. How are you doing here? Would you say everybody who knows you would say you're more devoted to Jesus Christ than you are to making a buck? Ouch, right? If we're going to really build the right foundation so that we live our lives right, then we need to have the experience of grace, because those who have genuinely experienced grace become more graceful. Here's the reality. Those who have genuinely experienced God and His love and His personal touch in transforming their lives have no problem believing Him in the area of finances, but those who haven't do, which is you. See, a lot of us are extremely religious and use the God language, but in our life, we're not living the God life. That was true of the church at Corinth. I mean, we're not unique. We're the same as they were. And look what the Bible says to them, speaking about finances, 2 Corinthians 8:7-9. Just as you excel in everything, spiritually, man, you guys are excelling. You're doing unbelievable. You're excelling in your faith. You're excelling in your communication. You're excelling in what you know. You're excelling in your passion spiritually. You're excelling in your love for us. Man, you guys are growing spiritually, but you're blowing it in the area of giving. See that you also start excelling in this grace of giving. And why should we excel in the grace of giving financially? And he tells us it's obvious, for you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, so that you through his poverty might become rich. I'll tell you why you should excel in the grace of giving, because you say you've experienced the unbelievable grace of Jesus where he gave everything for you. Isn't it sad there are some of us who say we've experienced the grace of Jesus giving us everything, but we're unwilling to offer any grace to anyone else? It's crazy, right? That's why the church is known to be a place of hypocrisy, people who say things that are beautiful but don't live a life that's that beautiful. And it's really true in finances. Can I ask you, have you experienced really the touch of Jesus in your life in a personal way that has transformed you? Because I think many have the words but don't have the experience. So before I finish this talk and before we end in worship, I want to give you that chance. So would you just for a moment bow with me in a word of prayer, just for a moment. And if you're ready, say, I need what Jesus can give me. I need to make him my Lord. Why don't you pray with me? Take my words in this prayer and make them yours. You don't have to say it out loud, but in your heart, just say, Jesus, I need your grace. I need you to fill me up from the inside out. And I don't deserve it. I've followed the wrong truths. I've lived for the wrong God. I've sinned against you. But you died on the cross to forgive me and rose again to give me new life. I'm asking you to come into my life and change me. In Jesus' name, amen. Now, before I give you the last thoughts and we move into worship, I really want to encourage you, if you just prayed with me, there's so much you can experience of God. You need to take next steps, and we'd love to share with you some possible ones for you. Just take out your smartphone and text to this number, 313131. And the only message you have to send is Northridge, and we'll send you information about next steps you can take. We won't invade your life. We'll just send you information. If I'm going to build the right foundation in my life, then I also need to do a third thing. I need to build upon my devotion to the right God and my experience of grace by growing in my faith. I need a measure of faith because I have to trust that God will be true to his promises. And here's his promise, Philippians 4:19, and my God will meet all your needs. How many of your needs? How many of your needs? My God will meet all your needs according to his glorious riches in Christ Jesus. You have to trust that or you will trust money. Which one do you trust? And then finally, look at 2 Corinthians 9:7. Speaking about money, the Apostle Paul says, each man should give what he's decided in his heart to give. You can give what God wants you to give, or you can give what you want, or you don't have to give it all. You just decide. But know this, when you give, don't give reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful, a grateful giver. If we're going to really build the right foundation, then our giving should flow out of a heart of gratitude. Do you know when I'm really, really, really grateful for someone, I have no problem being generous with that someone. How grateful are you really to God? Really? And the reason I think this is so important is because we're moving into Thanksgiving week, and I think here in America, we've turned Thanksgiving into time where we pretend to be grateful, but what we do is we just magnify our own personal greed and consumption. I'm really, really thankful, so I'm going to take even more. And I think this week we should carry into the week a true gratitude for God so that we can expand our gratefulness to him. And so we gave you on that Encyclopedia Britannica outline I gave you, we gave you an empty page. And if you're using the Northridge app, if you use our Northridge app and you're taking notes there, we gave you space there too. For you to spend a couple of moments thinking about what you're really grateful for, letting God stir a heart of gratitude in you. And I've asked the worship team to come out and to lead us in a song expressing gratitude to him and our gratefulness to what he's done into our lives. And I hope you'll carry it into your Thanksgiving week. And I hope that you will master money so it doesn't master you, because the truth really can set you free. Let's worship him and express our gratitude.
I was blind, now I'm seeing in color. I was dead, now I'm living forever. I had failed, but you were my redeemer. I've been blessed beyond all measure. I was lost, now I'm found by the Father. I've been changed from a ruin into treasure. I've been given a hope and a future. I've been blessed beyond all measure. I am counting every blessing, letting go and trusting when I cannot see.
team that's going to be down front. Anybody comes to the front of the aisle, someone will pray with you. I want to just tell you, have a very happy Thanksgiving. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, everybody.